Security is not difficult. It's the basic stuff, but it's done well, and it's done well every single day. That's the essence of cybersecurity.
This is GamyCast.
As a primary target for ransomware campaigns,
it's security and testing and performance and scalability.
Risk and compliance.
We can actually automate that.
Take that data and use it.
Joining me today is Adam O'Donnell, CEO from Convergent Systems, and today we're discussing cybersecurity for SMBs. So Adam, thanks for joining and welcome.
And thank you very much indeed. Absolute pleasure to be here.
So Adam, I want to start with you and your background. Now, I know you've given a lot of talks, presentations, etc. about your background, and my audience always loves hearing about people, their cool backgrounds. You've obviously got special forces experience. I'm really keen to maybe hear some of your thoughts, your experiences, anything that you've got for me, anything the audience might enjoy learning from.
Yeah, sure. My career started off like a normal career. I worked for a bank back in the days when the best way of getting money, unauthorized money out of a bank was a sawn-off shotgun. And yeah, we did actually have, I think, one of the West's biggest robberies with £22 million at one point, using, should we say, the traditional methods. I then moved from that into networking, IT networking, and then got kind of bored with that. And the opportunity presented itself to join lesser known branch of UK Special Forces, the SAS Reserve. And so while my friends were off having fun on weekends, I was running around the Brecon Beacons with what seemed like a house on my back. And from about 280 of us started and about 11 of us in it. And from that point on, it was my career was like two separate careers in parallel. I would quite literally be doing my work in IT, and then I would get a call from the regiment, and they'd be looking for volunteers to go on a deployment. So I was in Bosnia and various parts of Africa, and even I managed to get a trip to climb Mount Everest. I was part of a successful expedition to climb Mount Everest in Afghanistan. And as a result of a one-night stand on Mount Everest that got possibly a bit out of hand, ended up moving to Australia and then did the whole thing over again. So joined the Australian Commando Reserve and went off, got shot at for Queen in a different country this time, thankfully with a deplorable degree of accuracy, and found my way into cybersecurity. And what I found was there was a lot of crossover, maybe not of some elements of the skill set, but definitely the mindset and the way we approach problems has really helped.
You had the opportunity to climb Mount Everest.
An officer that I did selection with, so went through the whole selection process. He and I deployed to Afghanistan, to Bosnia together. So we were in Bosnia, and he was putting together an expedition, a civilian private expedition. The boss, the colonel of the regiment, heard about it and said, well, tell you what, open it up to the regiment and I'll fund it. I got the gig of running the IT. I had a bit of, obviously, an IT background. So I was in charge of comms. I was in charge of the website update. So I wrote a blog at the time. Prince Charles was our patron. And I got an email from Prince Charles at one point telling me how much he enjoyed the blog.
Wow, that's amazing. So he wrote to you personally to say he enjoyed your blog.
The blog got blown up, as in the website got blown up a long, long time ago. This was back in 2000. But I kept all the posts, and I kept the invitation to Highgrove. We all went, after we got back, Prince Charles, or like King Charles, invited us to Highgrove. And so we had about a dozen SAS blokes in Highgrove, all trying to individually steal one of his wine glasses because they all had the fleur-de-lis. So, sorry, boss.
That's incredible. I've done a lot of interviews in my time and I haven't heard that yet, so you're the first. But one of the things I've found over doing this podcast for so long is I've interviewed people like yourself, you know, special forces background, military, government, whatever, then they move more into the cybersecurity world. So is there anything in terms of your experience that's helped shape the way you approach cybersecurity today?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I think a lot of us get into it. We're protectors by nature. And I know certainly for myself, I, from a very early age, did not like bullies. I despise bullies. I despise people who oppress others. And I had a natural tendency towards security of some shape, fashion, or form. In terms of how we do business, I think The military people I've worked with are very good at breaking a problem down to its constituent parts and solving it, coming up with an approach and communicating it without rambling. My company Convergence, we're all ex-military. And so sometimes the meetings can be very, not clipped, but it's to the point. Because we're used to talking over low bandwidth or low capacity links, radio links, for example, you have to be very efficient at how you communicate. And so we are. Also, I think we're very good at planning and contingency planning, so the what ifs. And we're also very good at communicating ideas simply and convincingly.
Okay, so Adam, you raise a great point in terms of you're all ex-military. I'm a person who likes to get to the point as well. Admittedly, I've never worked in the military, although people probably would describe me as militant in my approach, especially in my interviews. So would you say then sometimes from my understanding of dealing with people who are ex-military going into, in your terms, a civilian world, does that rattle people a bit because you are so efficient, you're so direct, you're so to the point? Does that like rattle everyday people?
I think some people, what I would call the old school, can be a bit, should we say, less human-centric. The people I've worked with, even over the last 20 years, I think they've had to work with a lot of people in a lot of very different environments. It hasn't been full-on warfighting. It's been, say, counterinsurgency. It's been support and influence. It's been tasks that required a high degree of human focus. And you simply cannot do that by pointing your head. We never point in the military. We always use what we used to call the Brecken hand, that you would use the full hand and point at someone with the hand. You can't do that in the civilian world. It just doesn't work. And so the people that are doing well, the ex-military people who are doing well, are the ones that really get that there is a human dimension to everything.
Yeah, most definitely. Okay, I want to press on this a little bit more because this is really, really important in terms of communication skills, the approach. Would you say that people that are working in the private sector, historically never worked in, you know, public sector or military or whatever, do you think that perhaps they over-talk points, they're not so direct and to the point, and then as a result of not being direct and to the point, they just lose people? They lose people in terms of getting budget for cybersecurity. They lose people in explaining the benefit of cybersecurity. Do you think there's something with the experience and skill set and the caliber that you bring from your experience by being direct and to the point that maybe you're not convoluting people with your points?
Absolutely. I remember my first ever run out as a team commander. I was giving what we call a back brief to the boss. So you're given a mission, which is very much, here's the task, here's the purpose. Come back and tell me how you're going to achieve it. And it's a way of achieving alignment. That's a whole different topic. And I came back, I would say, not as prepared as I could have been. And I, to be brutally honest, I think some of it I was making up as I went along. And he told me, Adam, he's very friendly, Adam, if this doesn't get better in the next three sentences, I'll send you away and you can come back in an hour when you're ready. And it was a very gentle way of letting me know that I had to raise my game. And so he didn't want to hear, well, yes, and he didn't want to hear, well, hopefully, you know, that's one word that if you ever use that in a briefing in the military, your credibility disappears. And so I became very good because I had to be very good at understanding my task, understanding my approach, because if you don't understand it, you can't explain it.
That is a really great point that you raise. And I think I'm just trying to understand the correlation of people in our industry, perhaps where they're going wrong, because maybe they don't understand, if you don't understand what's happening or the task, it's hard to then tell other people what's going on. So would you say that's where maybe some of the gap is, maybe in the private sector as well, that people are just very focused on maybe not the task at hand. They're probably focused on other things. And then as a result, people are confused. They don't know what's going on. I think there needs to be more alignment to that task. So what would be your approach with your experience if someone's listening and they think, well, I'm going off task, how do you sort of get back on the right path?
So we use this concept called commander's intent, which is a narrative. It's a story. It's where the boss brings the task alive in a way that you actually get what effect he's trying to have. And what that does, it enables us to use our initiative, because as the old saying goes, no plan survives contact with the enemy. And we can't keep going back for new instructions, what do I do now, and so on. The commander's intent is a key part of unleashing initiative. And ask themselves the question, if the boss was here right now and knew nothing except what I know, what would they tell me to do? I've worked in this space quite a bit. I've worked in incident response, and I've helped organizations to get ready for the day they can't plan for. And yeah, I would say the majority of organizations, they may have a plan, but it's what I would call shelfware. It's been written to satisfy an audit box, but they haven't actually executed it. They haven't given it a go on what I would call race day conditions. We have this beautiful phrase in the military: the enemy always gets the final vote, or the enemy is the final auditor of your plan.
Yeah, okay. That's, look, I think you're so right. And I think that, again, this is what's really important to me, is getting those answers for people. And that's why we're focused now on SMBs. So would you then say, from your experience, like, everyone's very focused on, you know, the big guys, the enterprise clients. I get that. But then what about the smaller companies, the SMBs? Do you think, like, just like no one is thinking about them? I mean, outside of maybe what you're doing and your company's doing, but I don't hear a lot of that. And I speak to a lot of people in this space. So would you say there's a very massive gap that people just, I don't want to say the words don't care, because I think that's a bit full on, but forgotten about maybe?
Yeah, I think forgotten about, or possibly ignored, or they're being offered a solution that's potentially either a watered-down version of an enterprise-grade product, or they actually, sometimes the SMBs themselves don't know what they want. They're a difficult, should we say, market segment. They're a difficult market to engage with because they are so diverse. Like, for example, you can generally assume that enterprises, okay, we can debate the level of cyber maturity, but there are some large enterprises that are remarkably lacking in cyber maturity, but they're generally increasing, they're getting better. Whereas you can have, in the SMB market, you can have people and organizations who are still using free versions of software, or free versions of security products, because that's all they know. They know about firewalls, they know about antiviruses, and that's it. And that just doesn't really work in the cloud.
I know. And look, you are right. And I think it's just something that people do talk about, but just not often. It's usually the conversations that I have is more at the enterprise level, the larger organizations. So then that brings me to my next point. What do you sort of see are the biggest issues facing SMBs?
There's a wonderful concept called the availability bias. And I think a little bit like zebras in a herd, they kind of hope that the predators will pick the other one. I think there's a little bit, there are people who have been the victims of an attack, and for them, it's all too real. And there's the ones that haven't yet been the victim of a cyber attack. And they're, some of them are using hope as a method. I would say they struggle with the fact that, ironically, people like us make cyber too expensive. You know, they generally run the smaller end of the market. They have one person, a small team that is usually responsible for all of IT. So not just the cyber, but the running of it, the maintenance, and so on and so forth. Finding expertise at a reasonable cost, very, very difficult. They know they need to do something. They're just not sure what. They get bombarded by articles and top three things, top five things, and so on and so forth. They know they know they need to do stuff. They just don't know how far is far enough.
Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying. Okay, so a couple of things in there. So definitely hear your point around they're being bombarded by articles, content. How come not many people, and I mean, I look at this stuff all day, so I think I'm pretty well versed to ask this. Why aren't people actually focused on this is how you secure more of a small business? Now, and I understand that's what you're doing with Convergence, but again, that's sort of rare. Because again, everything is at that bigger end of town. And then I'm just curious as to why that's the case. But then also, you said before that things are, quite expensive then. So how are companies, I mean, even if you want to talk about what Convergence is doing, but it's just more so how are we going to cater for smaller organizations, or else then we're going to constantly be having the same problem because these smaller companies can't afford some ridiculous overkill product or service that they probably don't need anyway because it might be overkill. So I'm just trying to map this all out because it's something like these smaller companies are still suppliers of large enterprises. So these are part of our ecosystem. So it's in the best interest of enterprises to make sure that they are secure.
Absolutely. Because we're seeing, like, you know, second, third order or organizations, small businesses being hacked and then island hopping up the food chain. We're seeing that. And so, yeah, they are part of the ecosystem. I think enterprises buy things differently. Enterprises tend to buy best of breed. You know, you want a mail filtering system, you go and buy a mail filtering system. You want a firewall, buy a firewall. You want intrusion detection, et cetera, et cetera. You go and buy what's best for your situation. SMBs haven't got that luxury. They haven't got that budget and they haven't got that time. And so I see the future for SMB market being like a suite, a product that's modularized and that they can buy what they need. Like, for example, you need your social media monitors. Cool. We'll do that. You've got this product. Yes, we can take in feeds from there and so on. What Convergence does, or what we're doing, is we've made the call to go purely for the cloud-based SMBs. Heading towards 26% of small, medium business is purely cloud. We recognize that as soon as you start going on-premise, then things get a bit more complex. At this point, we're focused purely on cloud. We make it simple and because cloud is repeatable, it's relatively straightforward for us to onboard new clients because it is repeatable. It's a pattern. So I think those simplified products are designed with, I'm going to say, lower maturity audiences in mind are the way forward.
Do you think as well, Adam, that companies out there have tried to maybe approach SMBs, but just their solution is just overkill, right? So it's like, we don't need this military grade thing that's going to cost $4 billion a year for some company that's only making $500,000 a year. Like, do you think there's a lot of that that goes on?
I think what they do, what we're seeing is effectively paywalling, or yeah, we'll give you product light. We'll give you a reduced feature set so that we can effectively, you know, we can justify dropping the price. We'll take out a lot of stuff. And so we'll just give you a watered down version of our products. I think also you've only got to look at the 365 admin panel when you go to security and privacy and just see it's an absolutely bewildering array of settings. And so even Microsoft have introduced a enforced security defaults button just to make it accessible to the low maturity of organizations.
Great word, bewildering. Why do you think that's the case? I mean, look, I'm a Mac person and I have been for years, so I haven't seen the back end of 0365 in any sort of fidelity. So I'm just curious to know what's going on there.
It's an incredibly comprehensive ecosystem environment. And so it is, by the very nature of the environment, yes, there are so many settings because it has to be tailorable to so many different applications and uses. So it has to be complex. It has to have those options. The trouble is knowing how they all interact and knowing that if I turn that particular one on, what are the following effects? Like Microsoft's, and I'm not targeting Microsoft here. I think I use it regularly. I'm a Mac Apple acolyte, but I use Microsoft products. The whole thing was usable out of the box. And so there was some, the security settings originally were pretty low because they wanted it to be usable by work groups. And as time moves on, that didn't work. And so there's always this trade-off between usability and security. And we're never going to get it right for all possible situations.
And I was just going to get into that because, look, you're so right. I understand that when there's so much stuff going on, there's complexity, which I kind of get from a security point of view. But then if I switch to my consumer hat, it's like, this is just too much going on. It's over the top. It's excessive. And then as a result, people just can be bothered. They don't turn on 2FA or MFA or whatever because it's like, oh, there's too much rigmarole involved. So do you think because people see whether it's the admin or the back end of 0365 or whatever it is, the rigmarole, therefore they're like, couldn't be bothered, I'm just going to forgo this because it's all too hard to understand and it requires a lot more time for me to just access a very rudimentary system.
Oh, totally. Slight diversion, but many of it, 30 years ago, I rebuilt an old MG sports car down to the very last nut and bolt. Now, if I open the bonnet of my car, it basically says, put oil here, put water here, and leave the rest alone. And that's, I can imagine for someone whose day job isn't cyber, opening up an admin panel with the task of implementing two-factor authentication. I think at one point it was something like 13 different steps you had to go through. It was quite a task. It's not hard. It's just knowing which steps to do. And if it's not your bread and butter, it is daunting. And so one of the things that our app does is it will actually, using APIs, go into your 365 environment and it will do an assessment based on better practice and identify a number of, if one of a better term, quick wins, easy wins. Like, we notice you haven't got MFA turned on for these accounts. Swipe here and we'll do it for you. And so that, what we've done is we've made cyber accessible to people whose day job is not cyber, by putting it in easy to understand terms. If they want to drill into a bit of an explanation, there's an explanation available, but it makes it simple.
Absolutely. Because again, as a practitioner myself, I understand the security side of things, but then as a consumer front, and I like to always look at all angles, it's annoying. I mean, if I'm going to a doctor and they're like, hey, Carissa, there's something wrong with you. Here are the steps you need to follow. This is it. I don't want to hear about the science and the biology and how your bloodstream works. And I don't want to know that. I just want to know there's something wrong. Follow the process. Because again, I'm not a doctor by trade. I probably don't really have an interest in that. The same way that if you're just in a company, you've got to do some security stuff, but they don't want to get into how all the stuff works and the blinky lights and this and that. So I think that this is where I believe the industry has missed the mark of who they're selling this stuff to. Because if you're just, 10-person company, you want to be able to get it right and secure yourself as best as you can at, a reasonable price point, but also you don't want to know all the ins and outs and the history of cybersecurity. You just want to get on with it.
Yeah, it's a concept that I call just enough security, and the zebra analogy works here because there are something like 350 million SMBs in the world, and if we even looking at the, say, 25-26% cloud, purely in the cloud, at some point. The idea is to make us all a tough enough target. Will the threat evolve? Of course it will. And we have to keep evolving as well. But I think we can still evolve at a sufficiently advanced pace to at least make it difficult enough that we'll go somewhere else. And then to cybercrime, no, of course we won't. Not in our lifetimes. But I do agree with you that, yes, we can make it simple enough. There's a beautiful term, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. And we can make it simple enough for someone to understand where they don't have to understand the, as I say, the ones and zeros, the difference between TLS 1.2 and 1.3 and so on. They can sit back knowing that they've done enough. And that's probably the most, that feeling of reassurance is what we deliver.
Absolutely. So I'm just curious now, let's look at the other side. So if I'm an enterprise, we mentioned before about obviously SMBs are delivering into enterprises, like some of these banks would have 50,000 plus suppliers that they work with that are all different shapes, sizes, levels. So if I'm an enterprise, I now know that, yes, okay, you've got to do, third-party risk management, all of that. You might have some tool in there doing it. You're not going to completely avoid issues in your supply chain. So what sort of the impetus now for enterprises that are working with smaller organizations that they need to work with, because again, it's an ecosystem. Do you think that there's sort of a push now to be like, we need to help smaller companies secure themselves? Is there any sort of talk around that, or what are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I think a rising tide should lift all ships. To a certain extent, banks are, if I say part of the problem, I mean, there has been a magnetic draw for cyber people to banks because that's where the money is. And so they are an obvious target. And so they are part of the reason why cyber people are so expensive because, there's such a competition for talent. And so we've got this draw of cyber talent into these large companies. And as you say, it is an ecosystem. So I think I was at a presentation a while back by a major bank, and what they've done, I think it's very clever, is rather than giving their staff mandatory security briefs, what they do is they help their staff become their domestic CISO, which I think is a very great step forward. I think, yeah, rather than just sending your vendors a tick and flick third-party risk assessment, I think larger organizations need to provide some level of, rather than just pure audit, like tell us that you're good enough and sign here to say you're good enough, there needs to be a level of consultation and actually going in and helping them identify the gaps and saying, look, you really, here's the top three things, a mini audit effectively. In fact, I'll go even further and say that I love to read. I'm a voracious reader. One of the books I was reading a while back was Turn the Ship Around, a military book by Commander David Marquette. It's a story about an underperforming nuclear submarine, which is possibly the most terrifying concept I can think of. And one of the things he talked about was embracing the auditor. And so rather than regarding the annual audit as an ordeal to be endured, it was something he transformed into a chance to learn. And therein lies a problem, because whenever I do presentations to audiences, what I ask a question, like, what's the biggest insult that you could ever receive in your professional world? And the overwhelming response from the corporate audience is always some variation of incompetent. We don't like to look incompetent. When I speak to military audiences, it is always a variation of Jack, as in I went Jack on my mates, I let my mates down. Incompetence or looking incompetent is something that we shy away from massively in the corporate world. It triggers us to think we're not good enough. And how do I then, I lose standing, I lose status in my professional career. And that's something I think at a cultural level we have to overcome.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, I want to press on this a little bit more. This is interesting. So you said embracing the auditor. Now, there are words that will trigger people. Audit, compliance, governance. Those are usually, any of those sort of words people are triggered. So for people listening, what would be your approach, Adam? How do you, from the book you've been reading or you have read, how do you embrace the auditor? Because at the end of the day, and I almost went into IT security auditing and I didn't, but because I'm very meticulous with things and I'd be a tough auditor. So what I want to know from you is, how do you do that? Because everyone's, I wouldn't say they're scared, but you know, like an auditor, like there's a very large gap between an auditor and then the rest of the company, right? Because they're not someone that you sort of call up to say, how's it going? It's usually them calling you and you're incompetent, right?
Correct. So things possibly have to change on both sides of the equation. I'm going to make the assumption that the person doing the audit has got wide experience, isn't some work experience kid with an Excel spreadsheet, tick and flick, has been around a bit and has seen this done in different places. Generally, if I'm an auditor and I come into your company, I'm going to make the assumption that your cybersecurity person has been doing the best they can with what they've got. There'll be problems, there'll be gaps, there'll be things that they want to do but simply can't, because if they do, something will break. And so whenever I point out, you haven't got this setting or you haven't got this enabled or this set up, if he was adopting an embrace the auditor approach, he would say, well, yeah, you're right. The reason I haven't done it is this. And I'd be really interested to hear your views on how we can make that better, because here's the challenge. So how can you, based on your wide experience seeing this done in other places, how are other organizations solving this problem?
Yeah, see, that's a better approach. But I think when you say it like that, it makes more sense. But I think that, again, what's coming up in my mind is just an auditor with like a clipboard. I know that's, you know, this is me figuratively speaking, but then it's this coldness perhaps. And it's like, oh, you stuffed up there, Adam. That's what I think people have in their mind when it comes to auditors. It's like, there's that gotcha part, even though that might not be the case, but there's that element of, I'm really nervous because they're going to highlight and illuminate how incompetent we may be, even though I've tried my hardest.
Yep, I can't disagree with that. And I think it depends very much on your inner view towards how you view yourself and how you view people passing judgment on you. There's another wonderful book I was reading. It was The Gift of Imperfection by Brené Brown. And whole different topic of conversation, but this idea that, yes, we do fear the judgment of others, and moving past that to be comfortable in your own self. So I get up every day and I do the best I can with what I've got. I may fail, I may come short, but I will get up and I will try again. And that, I think that's possibly, that's the special forces mindset, the idea that I will open myself up to judgment. And if I'm found wanting, then fine, this is not for me. Otherwise, you pass selection. And that willingness to be open to judgment, I think, is critical. Because as soon as we start approaching these things, if our culture looks at the audit results and immediately uses them as a mechanism to, should we say, censure or beat up on an executive, now we've failed. We have absolutely failed as leaders. If we instead look at it as an opportunity for what can this teach us, maybe we need to invest more than the $500 per person annually that we're currently investing in cyber. Maybe we need to do things differently. I would strongly encourage, if you're a senior executive and you're getting these sort of audit reports, the first thing you have to ask yourself is, what was my role in your mistake?
Okay, you raise a great point there. Now, you said before, if people are beating up potentially on the executive, so why do people do that? Do they just want to blame someone and sort of deflect the blame onto someone else, and usually it's the executive?
I think we are a very heavy compliance culture in Australia. We love green boxes. We love amber, we cope with a couple because they make the greens look good, but we do not like red boxes. We do not like, we love compliance. And I'll quote Alistair McGibbon. He made the observation quite a few years ago that security brings compliance, but compliance doesn't bring security. And so when you're a manager who's tasked with compliance, yeah, that's and any non-compliance is therefore to put it harshly and bluntly, that it's seen as a failure. If you're punished for, or in some way censured for, a failure to comply, that will affect your actions. That will affect how you report. It will affect how you see things.
Why? Okay, I'm really curious about this now. Why are we as Australians, or as a nation, why are we so compliant though? Like, where does that sort of stem from?
I have a theory, and I'm more than happy to put it out there because I'd love feedback on it. As a Western nation, without wanting to get into the whole First Peoples debate, as a Western nation, we are 200 years old plus change. And we got here by Royal Naval ship. And the journey takes about 5 months. Now, whether you are a criminal being relocated, whether you're a free settler, regardless, you are subject for 5 months to naval discipline. Everything happens by the bell. Everything happens according, the captain's word is quite literally law. And so everything happens to a cadence that is dictated by the captain. Now, that's a cultural induction program if ever I heard one. The first leaders and the first communities were under the control and command of naval officers. Again, they've got a certain way of doing things, especially in those days. They had to, because if you didn't have a strict compliance regime on a ship in those days, a lot of bad things happened. Disease outbreaks, lack of discipline. The ship relies on everyone pulling in the same direction at the same time. And I think I would contend that that's only 200 years ago. That's not a long time in cultural terms. We learned as a people to comply. We learned to basically follow the rules as they were set down. Yes, I know people will talk about, you know, the country larrikin being very different. I would totally agree. I think there is a huge cultural difference between city Australia and rural Australia. And I think that in the cities especially, we are, which is where obviously most large enterprises are, we're very compliance driven.
Wow. Okay. That is really interesting. And look, again, I know it's a bit of a hard question, but again, it's just your opinion. It's your theories. I love that. It's just us having a conversation which people can learn something from. So, okay, I want to press on this a little bit more because this is really interesting for me. Now, you mentioned that obviously you're a very compliant nation. So would you say, if you had to pick one option on who to be, is it best to be non-compliant in terms of the mindset or more compliant? What would get a better outcome overall? Like, if we focus on security, because I don't know, maybe the places like the United States, less compliant in terms of Australia. What would be better in terms of the mentality to have in order to get a more secure nation, for example? I know it's a bit of a hard question to answer, but I'm just curious to see where your mind goes.
when you focus simply on a per control one by one, you get a very poor outcome. When you take a risk-based approach, when you take an asset and risk-based approach based on a credible threat assessment, and in your treatments for those risks, you reference ISM controls for or whatever control library you're using, then you get a better outcome.
Wow, that is so interesting. Okay, well, thanks for sharing that. So I just want to go back a step now, back to the auditing side of things. Because you are a avid reader, have you read the book Mindset, I think, by Dr. Carol Dweck, around the growth mindset? And when you fail, the growth mindset people, like you said before in the Special Forces, is try again. But the people who probably don't get as far are like, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to give up now.
I'm familiar with what she talks about.
Yeah, okay. Well, I read it a while ago and I thought it was really interesting. And I think it just, as you were talking, Adam, that's what was coming up in my mind around, you know, when an auditor is, you know, in people's words, criticizing you, it gives you an opportunity to go, okay, this is where we're at. But we now have a great opportunity to be better rather than getting upset, which is not that growth mindset.
It's what organizational culture is something that absolutely fascinates me. It's one of the things I love about being a startup, especially that effectively the team is military or ex-military and my friends. What I would say is an incredible culture of growth and learning and so on. It's a cultural thing, and people find the cultures suit them. And when we make a mistake, we look to our peers, we look to our tribe, I call it the circle of sacrifice, the team that we're in, and we have to give something up to be part of a team, but we look to that team for how failure is handled here. And if everyone kind of takes a step backwards and goes, oh dear, then we very quickly learn that either failure is not to be shared and talked about, or it is to be hidden, or it's to be excused by, well, I wasn't totally responsible. There was someone else involved as well. It is very rare, as I would say, in most organizations, for someone to hold their hand up and say, you know what? I staffed up. Mea culpa, that one was on me. I've done it once. I've actually done it quite a few times. And I just said, you know what? I put my hand up and the next day and I tendered my resignation. And the boss said, well, I'd rather you didn't do that again. But I finally found someone who's willing to A, take a risk to make progress, and B, own their stuff up. So you're going nowhere, sunshine.
My goodness. Okay, that's pretty wild. But at least you're honest about it. And I think that's the challenge. And I think, look, if I focus now back on to SMBs, I've spoken to many people that have just, they know they work in cybersecurity and they're like, hey, they're involved in some type of security-related incident or some type of scam, phishing scam, whatever it is, phishing email. And just, I think they feel afraid to be like, put their hand up and be like, I made a mistake, because they're embarrassed.
Mm. To go back to the Special Forces analogy, or the world of Special Forces, we have a concept or a philosophy of getting stuff done. It's called Mission Command. And it relies completely on trust. It relies on trust that you will act in the best interests of the tribe, given any given situation. But it goes both ways. It relies that if you get it wrong and you've acted with the best of intent, but it goes wrong, that I, as your boss, will back you 100%. And as soon as that is a two-way relationship, and I think a lot of managers forget that. They forget that mistakes will happen. You want people to take risks and try things and use their initiative? I guarantee you, it will go wrong. And so if I'm going to stick my neck out and have a crack and use my initiative, I want to know that if it doesn't work out, that you've got my back as my boss.
Absolutely. And that's not always the case for a lot of people, especially working in larger organizations.
I've met a lot of people who say they would put their life on the line for me. I'm interested in the manager now who put their career on the line.
Yeah, look, I think probably not a lot of people can answer that, right? I think a lot of people don't want to do that.
I have known managers who will stand their ground, and when people have stuffed up, they have actually gone into bat for them and said, no, you know, that person acted on my direction and I gave them that free rein. And so anything that's coming their way is shared with me. And that breeds a tribe that will follow you into hell and back. because they know that you've got their back.
Absolutely. We want to be around people like that. And I don't see enough of that, if I'm honest. Like, working in corporates myself, there wasn't a lot of that going on, I've found, in my experience.
Yeah, so when you join the military, you are part of a team. You are no longer Adam O'Donnell. You are a rifleman in a new function because of that team. And turns your value system on its head, and this idea that you are there to work with your mates. And it's a unique mindset. And when you're in that environment, you know that even though you might not like the guy you're working with, you know that if it goes wrong, he's got your back.
And I love that. And I think it's great to have interviewed you today, because it really, like, it gave a very different perspective to the show and a different dimension as well from, you know, your background, your experience, and you've sort of brought that forward into the work that you're doing today. So is there anything, Adam, you'd like to leave our audience with in terms of closing comments or final thoughts?
Security is not difficult. I think, especially if you're a small, medium business, or if you're servicing small, medium business, one of the misconceptions about the SAS, the Special Forces in general, is that it's Superman leaping buildings in a single bound and so underwater knife fighting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not. It's doing the basics well and consistently. Cybersecurity, it's a lot of basic stuff. You know, multi-factor authentication, backups. It's the basic stuff, but it's done well, and it's done well every single day. That's the essence of cybersecurity. Just because it's simple doesn't mean it's easy. And so get help. One of the things I will say is that what Convergence is doing, we're looking to make it easy and to make it accessible. But I think those lessons apply to anyone in security.
Thanks for tuning in. For more industry-leading news and thought-provoking articles, visit kbi.media to get access today.
This is KBCast, the voice of cyber.